wrong side of the pond. He is DJ Schweitzer examining a beer.
Yep.
I am Jeremy Lance.
You're drinking your beer.
I'll be drinking mine, yes.
Soon enough.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have it.
Back again. Feeling reinvigorated after yet another presidential election, as if we've not had enough in this country in the last 2 years.
Well, we definitely need more of them.
We needed more.
They seem to do a lot of goodwill just for the morale of the
people.
Nation.
Yeah. On the whole, I think it's good.
Yeah.
Good for stimulating conversation on the interwebs.
Keeps it interesting.
That it does. That it does. And we will be getting into a presidential election of the soccer type, of course.
Yep. USSF presidential election happened Saturday morning, like at 10 a.m.
It was oddly early. Oddly early. Yeah. Definitely not for the prototypical angry internet person who's hungover at that point.
It definitely reflected the fact that up until this election, this was something no one else cared about.
Yeah, exactly.
So why not have it at 10 a.m.?
I'm trying to think of the coverage of the last election. And
there was not any.
There were people who were covering it. Like, I went back and found tweets
about
it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's people reporting
on it. Sunil also ran unopposed, so it was
quick vote.
Yeah, real quick. All that said, we'll be getting into that much deeper than we have thus far later on in the program, of course. Still Premier League action to keep your appetites fully filled, and we'll be getting through all that too.
Yay.
Everyone's really excited. We have a question of the week, which deals more specifically with the presidential election we've already talked about to this point as well. So lots of things to talk about this week, which means we should start with the thing that none of us like to talk about.
Right. Everyone hates this fantasy.
You'll be delighted to know that we both sucked as normal this week.
I don't know how us both sucking makes me happy. If you sucked and I did less suck-ish, that'd be okay.
I just thought you're going to be we're going to be comrades in suckery.
Okay, let's do that. Let's go down with the ship.
Comrades in suckery, indeed. I fell 4 places to 63rd. You fell 2 places to 121st. That's out of 143 people. For those of you who are keeping track at home, 7 shows in a row, excuse me, because we've had weeks that have gone shows that have spanned more than 2 weeks. Fantasy stalwart back in the big league FC, but there are people nipping at the bud right now.
Like who?
I didn't look.
Jay Slack?
Jay Slack was in the top 10.
I did
notice that.
Jay Slack.
Are things going on in your life?
What have you become?
We expect more. That's certain. So there's your fantasy update. That allows us to get into the weekend that was actual football. Let's start with match day 27.
Whoop, whoop.
Do we want to go with the early morning, or do we want to go with the one that you led your actually top 5 points we're going to be talking about in your text message? If you guys want to know how we plan these things, Jeremy sends me a text message
just
12 hours before he shows up here saying, here are the 5 things we're going to talk about
here
tonight.
Are the topics.
Yeah.
Do your homework.
Yeah. Most of the time I'm doing the homework when he gets here in typical homework fashion for me. Let's start with the one you put at number 1, and that is the opposite directions the Manchester sides are moving at the moment. Uh-huh.
Yeah, opposite sides and creating what is now
a gap.
A 16-point gap.
Mind it?
Well,
it's large enough to mind, I think.
I would say so. It's a bit of a chasm at this point. Manchester City 5, Leicester City 1. 2 years ago, this was a good idea to put on NBC at 12:30. This year,
not so much.
Not a good choice.
You know what, though? For the American audience, this is what you put on NBC at 5:30. Or, excuse me, 12:30.
They want goals.
They want goals.
They want
this
goals.
Match has 6 goals in it.
Uh-huh.
Most of them for one side.
Four from the same guy.
That one guy, of course, being Sergio Aguero. You thought he was dead. He is not. He is still
here.
Exactly.
Can we talk about this for a second? Like, I feel like, and it's not just us. It's not just people that just follow this as fans, but I think just pundits too. Like, I feel like we're just not hearing enough about the fact that Sergio Aguero is still the preeminent goal scorer in the Premier League for going on like 6 seasons now.
Well, let's rephrase that. He's the preeminent goal scorer in the Premier League based on goals per appearances, right? Like, that's where it is.
Kind of.
For Aguero.
I feel like it's just based on goal. I mean, he's got, like, I don't know, half a dozen 20-plus goal seasons under his belt right now?
I'm not disputing this, right? You can measure this a bunch of different ways. This is like arguing, like, is Salah or Kane the best striker in the league right now? Is Aguero, like, all these guys are phenomenal strikers.
They're all phenomenal. But who are we talking about? We're talking about Salah and we're talking about Kane on a week-to-week basis.
Mm-hmm.
Aguero's just kind of doing his thing. Like, what Aguero's doing is becoming so typical from him that us and everyone else just really stopped talking about it.
Well, you know,
because it's par for the course.
I was trying to think a little bit about this because I knew this was going to be a bit of the conversation. Like,
okay,
we're all like shocked, like, oh my God, look at Aguero. He's right. Still capable of doing these fours.
21 goals on the season.
Which, by the way, is good for tied for second in the league.
Right. And by the way, his best ever in the Premier League is 26 goals. So we're looking at what will most certainly be his best season.
Yeah. And everyone's kind of just letting it fly under the radar. But here's the thing about Aguero that I think is a little bit of the difference between him and Kane, or him and Salah. Kane and Salah are doing it like on a weekly basis. They get their one, their two goals every single week. Bread and butter. That's what we expect. Aguero is a little bit more patchy. And a little bit that's due to his actual like injury record. He's
right, he'll do
constantly
that.
In the medical room. But when he isn't, he like goes a game where he doesn't get any goals, and then he has a game where he has four goals or three goals or you know, right? Like
right.
They come in bunches for him. And I think that's part of the reason why we go stretches without talking about him is one, we just assume that he's injured. But two, because he actually goes a little while in between his goals and then he just piles them in into one game.
And then I think this year it doesn't help the fact that he's just on a team that just can't stop scoring altogether.
Oh, well, in general, yeah. When they broke 100 goals, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Sometimes teams go years without scoring that many. So pretty prolific. But City, on the whole, extremely dominant in this match. Was fun. Like, early on, we thought this was going to be a game for, like, a minute. City,
hey, 1-1. We got ourselves a game.
All the way through halftime. And then Aguero, like, showed up in the second half. Was like, hey, by the way, I'm going to just score regularly.
Hi, everybody.
Every 15 to 20 minutes, I'm going to drop a goal in here. So City ended up rolling and extending that break, or excuse me, gap that they had between themselves and their City rivals in Manchester United. Let's talk quickly about that match, because it did not go very well for the Red Devils.
No.
Mm-mm.
No, it did not. Newcastle takes this one with a 1-0 victory. Hard fought by Newcastle. Their keeper, who I literally had not heard of till today, played out of his mind.
Martin Dubravka, he's on loan.
That
from,
guy.
I'm not even really sure where. I think he's on loan from Sparta Prague. It's where he's actually from at the moment.
Powerhouse.
Definitely a powerhouse. Most likely a leaning towards a full-time move coming in the summer. But enormous game out of this unknown player before today. Standing on his head on several occasions, making some point-blank saves. There were probably, I don't know, 4 to 5 play sequences during this game, especially in the second half, where you're like, there's no way United don't score in this situation.
Right.
Like, 8 guys taking shots.
This is leading to only one thing, and that's a good
yeah, and Dubravka came up on multiple occasions making some point-blank saves, really saving the day and leaving room enough for Matt Ritchie to get a 65th-minute goal. It was not too early, despite the calls that it was. And Newcastle hold on for the major, major win over Manchester United. Damaging to United's title bid, of course, right? Like, there's, let's be honest, there's no chance they're going to catch up at this point.
No.
But
it's
humongous for a Newcastle side who were legitimately scraping into the relegation zone. The victory pulls them out of that space and all the way up into 13th. Which just gives you an idea of how tight the bottom of the table is when they launch from the relegation zone all the way up to near mid-table.
And the typical hallmarks of a bad United performance, Lukaku just struggling out there, Lingard and Martial looking like the youngsters they are, and Paul Pogba being bad enough that he did not make it to the 70th minute. He had to be pulled.
Yeah.
The 66th minute in this one.
My favorite part of this game, hands down, watching dejected shots of Paul Pogba on the bench. Like, he legit looked like someone who suffered like a mild depression or maybe even a stroke mid-game. Like, completely glazed over stare. Just 1,000-yard-ish.
Yeah, but this is United. When things go bad for them, it's because their big players just go completely stone cold and look inept as can be.
The perfect time, I think, to extend Jose Mourinho's contract, right?
I thought it worked out great.
Definitely really well. Rewards you with a contract extension and a loss to Newcastle United. That would be less bruising if that were like maybe something that took place in the late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. This is 2018.
Right. That's bad. Or maybe in the movie Goal, which we found out last week is Kennedy's favorite movie.
Yeah, or at least the way that he found out about the club that he now plays for. And
so, by the way, United, this is their fifth loss of the season.
Mm-hmm.
How many losses did they have last year when they finished sixth?
Five.
Five losses last year. Already on five losses this year.
Hashtag contract extension.
Yes.
I mean, there's no other way to look at it.
Yeah, okay.
United now, as we've mentioned several times, 16 points behind their City rivals. Let's just write that off now, right? Manchester is blue this year. I feel fairly safe in saying that at this point.
Didn't really know that was up for debate.
Yeah.
Let's go find out what color North London is.
It's white.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Yeah,
it's white at the moment. Right. The North London Derby kicked off our soccer weekend with a bright and early 7:30 a.m. kickoff. I get the reasoning for them starting the game when they did in England. It makes perfect sense, but I know the world doesn't revolve. Yeah, I know the world doesn't revolve around the American audience, but man, you would think that that game would get a little bit more of a high key, like kind of a.
I feel like we're getting that this year. I feel like a lot of bigger matches have been 7:30 ones for us.
Well, I do know that part of the reason they play derbies early a lot of the time is because they like to have them in the daylight so that it's easier to identify the hooliganism that tends to pop out around the stadium that time of day. So,
and if you have it at noon as opposed to 3, that's 3 hours less of drinking before the match.
That's also a big part of it. Not something that they worry too much about in this country when it comes to tailgating, but it is something that rears its head from time to time, so I'd imagine it probably impacts things over there too. So,
sure.
That said, this wasn't about what time this thing kicked off. It was about the match that took place on the pitch. Premier League record attendance for this, by the way. Don't know if you noticed that. It was a crowd, I think, of over 86,000 taking in the action.
Well, you guys are at Wembley.
Look, I'm...
It's not like we're...
Look, I'm an FC Cincinnati person. All we talk about is attendance, so it's par for the course. Go Spurs. But setting that big record, not really surprising that people would turn out in droves for a London derby at the biggest stadium in London. But quite the match this actually turned out to be. And I say that knowing that the first half was actually kind of dull.
Yeah, it was terrible, actually.
I'm sorry you didn't enjoy it.
I didn't.
I didn't enjoy it either, mostly because of the same reason I enjoyed large stretches of the second half. It was the fact that Spurs kept pissing away chances, like shots directly at Cech.
Yeah.
It seemed like Cech had a great game. I'm not looking at the stats right now, and I'll try to pull them up quickly if I can. But Cech seemed like a guy who had a ton of saves in this game. And I'll know here momentarily. But I think a majority of those saves actually came from the fact that Spurs just took every shot directly.
I was
going to
say, Spurs took a lot of shots, and definitely a lot of shots on goal. I think it was like 6 or 8 shots on goal, which is in deep contrast to what Arsenal did in this match.
Yeah.
They recorded one shot on frame. It was like... Six, maybe.
I think it was six total. I'm looking at the stats right now. Definitely not exactly the
six to what? What? And what's
eight,
the other?
18.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
It was actually really even possession-wise, although that would be masked by the fact that Spurs were completely in control for large stretches of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Arsenal actually had the edge 50.1% to 49.9% on the possession front. But Spurs were the side that created a bulk of the chances. And it really felt like one of those games that Spurs were either going to create all these chances and then piss it away and lose it, or create all these chances, score one goal, and then piss away and end up with a draw. And they do end up eventually getting that leading goal coming from the guy who you'd expect to score it. You know, your dad, Harry Kane.
Mm-hmm.
22nd goal of the season, leading the Premier League in scoring. Also worthy of note was the fact that Kane...
This was goal 101, right?
Yeah, it was goal 101. But... it's also his sixth straight North London derby that he scored in, which I think was kind of a bit surprising to me. I wouldn't have thought it would have been that many. But it just shows the consistency that this guy has for a guy that actually regularly gets the he's not good in big games like thing thrown at him every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of flies in the face of that. Like,
can we talk about guys not good in big games?
Yeah, let's do it.
And now I will read the entire Arsenal starting 11.
Okay,
go on. Which of the two disastrous misses did you like most from Lacazette?
The one at the end, probably because it was the one that made me feel the best.
Because he fanned on two absolute sitters.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a one where he essentially beats Lloris. And then there's one where it's just played to him, and he just fires it into the rafters.
Yeah, both of those were in, like, the closing 5 minutes of the match as well. Arsenal had their chances at the very end, and legitimately, like, the chances they had in the game, their best came in that last 5 minutes. Spurs continuing to struggle a little bit with the ability to close out matches, but enormous win for Spurs gives them more daylight between themselves and Arsenal. 7 points now the gap. Spurs raised up into fourth place, at least temporarily, over top of your boys, who were not in action.
No, we're recording on a Sunday night, so whatever horrible, disastrous, apocalyptic fallout that will happen Monday, I don't know of it yet.
Yeah, you don't, but be emboldened knowing that it's West Brom that you're waiting to take on. All that said, good thing for Spurs. Arsenal, again, moving in the opposite direction. The thing that we need to talk about in this game, let's be honest, is once again, Jack Wilshere.
Mm.
I'm sure that wasn't what you were going to guess.
I was going to go Wenger and his just... general putziness.
But nah, I'm going with Jack Wilshere, and the reason why I need to talk about this, and this is purely
also putziness.
Well, putziness, but the fact that that dude's going bald. Did you notice that in this game? That was, if there's one takeaway that I came away from this game, like literally, I thought about this after the as I was taking my notes today.
Did he have like a draft of wind hit the back of his head as he was walking onto a plane?
No. Also, one of the best bald reveal moments of the week.
I mean, it was the one we all knew existed. We just never had the evidence.
Let's real quick sidebar into that bald moment. He's more bald than I expected.
He's about as bald.
Like, I didn't realize he was so bald on the back of his head.
Yeah. You don't generally lose the back. Like, I could grow out the back of my head right now.
Yeah.
And it would be the luscious part. It's generally the luscious part of your head because it's
the very back.
It's where all the blood flows.
Yeah, right.
So it actually is where your hair grows the strongest generally.
But he has like a friar tuck that extends literally all the way back down onto his neck.
It's shocking.
Yeah.
Maybe there's no blood in him.
But what really astounded me about this game is Jack Wilshere's been rocking the shaved look for a little while now. So that wasn't surprising to me. But there were stretches of the game where I thought like an old Wayne Rooney was playing midfield for Arsenal. And it was pre-hair system Rooney. And it really caught me off guard. And my immediate thought was, probably burned it on a cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
It could be. I don't know.
That happens all the time.
But that was my takeaway of it. It's ridiculous that like the North London derby happened. I felt like I should be like exuberant about this. But there's so much of the season left. And I just can't, like, I love the wins over Arsenal, but I also hate people gloating about winning. Like, it's something that drives me bonkers.
And like so, winning single matches as if that's some sort of merit.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Like, what do we win?
I like beating Arsenal. Like, love it. hate losing to them.
Right.
I hate it more than anything.
I have that. I know that feeling.
But I'm not exactly in a mood to, like, throw a party over the fact that we beat a team that we,
right,
A, should beat, and B, like, what's been achieved? Nothing.
Yeah.
7 points above them at the table in February doesn't exactly ring trophy to me. So,
woo.
Yeah. But hey, I'm stoked about it. It's a win nonetheless. London is white, at least for the time being.
Let's quickly whip around the rest of the league. We mentioned it, though. It is Sunday night, so mm-hmm. We have not seen the apocalypse that awaits Chelsea on Monday.
Party apocalypse.
Yeah.
The best kind.
Yeah, I think it was – I want to say it was RDM
mm-hmm.
that was on his last final – the straw that broke the camel's back was a West Brom loss.
I'm glad you bring this up because I looked into this a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was I wrong? Was I right?
No, you were absolutely right. Andre Villas-Boas sacked after a defeat against West Brom.
Oh, good Lord.
Di Matteo sacked after a defeat against West Brom. Chelsea's next match? Yes. It is West Brom.
And I want to say one of the first matches after we crap-canned Jose this last time was against...
against West Brom. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. In fact, you know what?
I remember the last time that we fired a manager after losing to West Brom because that was one of the times we had to go get Gus Hiddink the next week.
Mm. Prophetic. Goose is available for all we know.
Grandpa, we'll be calling you next week.
He's back out.
Yeah, we've come for the third time to come stay with your grandkids because it's gotten – the block is hot at home, and you had to come settle things down.
West Brom are bottom of the table, though. So, I mean, if there's anything you've got going for you, it's that. But that might actually be a condemnation
right.
as well.
Right. That that really just puts weight into why losing would be a terrible thing.
I'm sorry about that. Let's get into the games that did happen. Let's start with one that is cheery for a group that needs some cheer. Everton 3, Palace 1.
Mm.
Holy cow, they can win.
Can win, can score goals, can yeah, score goals.
In numbers, even. Good for Everton. Palace kind of returning to the mean after a solid streak of form
uh-huh.
over the last month or so. But Everton sneakily up to ninth.
Just sneaking on in there?
Very, very slowly.
Crystal Palace still struggling.
Yeah.
Roy Hodgson lost his mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you – did you see the post-match?
I didn't. I read about it a little bit, but give us the little synopsis.
Yeah, basically he kind of freaked out on the interviewer mm-hmm. and basically to the point where he said, like, you're not going to want to use this take, right? We're going to redo this interview.
that's usually a sign for, no, we're going to use this one. Yeah, if you don't want to use it, this is the one we're going to be pushing.
I don't know if they actually did use it, but – the internet used it, and mm-hmm. we all have seen it now.
Well, that's very true.
Other matches, Stoke won, Brighton Hove Albion won. This was actually, despite that scoreline, a somewhat entertaining match.
The end of this match was,
oh, it was fantastic.
It was unfolding while the U.S. soccer presidential okay,
so
happening.
We were doing the same thing.
So okay. You're watching on your computer, and then you're also watching the television screen.
I had three screens going. Mm-hmm. I had election on my phone.
Yeah.
I had Stoke Brighton on the TV. And then I had, I forget what event, but just Olympics. Just Olympic feed of some sort.
Something.
Playing on mm-hmm. my laptop. So I was just taking it all in.
Sports.
Yeah, sportsing it up.
Sportsing it up, indeed. But definitely, I don't know.
It was entertaining for what was a 1-1 result that involved Stoke.
Yeah, Shaqiri getting in on the goals, little curler.
Mm-hmm.
He still got it.
Yeah, you wonder where his head's at. Because at some point he's got to think, wow, I've really wasted a lot of my career at Stoke.
You know what, though? He's a guy, he was at Bayern, right?
Sure.
He's now at Stoke City.
Uh-huh. What's the next logical move?
Right, there's no...
Zenit St. Pete?
Well, He's now in the curve of his life where he's more concerned about the money he's making than it is about the trophies that he's going to win.
Unless
Stoke are in serious position to get relegated, which they're not out of that zone yet, but you stay in the Premier League because you're going to get paid in the Premier League, right? Endorsements roll in the Premier League. That's where you stay if you can. Otherwise, you go to China or Russia to get like a massive payday for something that you probably shouldn't be getting anyway.
Other matches, Swansea wins over Burnley 1-0.
Swans, keep it going.
There you go, Swans.
Talk about teams on the climb. Now out of the relegation zone, still on 27 points. Just a gap between them. But this was a side that was on the bottom of the table for practically the first third of the season. Now they're 7 points clear at the bottom. That's just a remarkable climb, continuing to see themselves into a better position.
Sung Young Ki scoring the goal. It'd been a good week for South Korea.
On the whole.
On the whole. And his goal adding to that. West Ham 2, Watford 0. Chicharito scored, so I was going to say,
there's no way we make a podcast through where Chicharito scores a goal and you're not mentioning it.
It was so good.
West Ham fans will enjoy this as well because record signing Arnautovic was also on the score sheet too. Much needed. Watford again losing. This is a side that just keeps trending in that downward angle. They've been now, I think, for a little while they're hanging up near towards the top four.
Right. I mean, and just recently they were able to beat the also rans of the Premier League, like Chelsea.
Yeah.
4-1.
They're now sitting in 11th place, just 4 points above the relegation zone. Again, ridiculous that 11th place is four points clear of the relegation zone. We're going to be in a position, I was thinking a bit about this today. The end of the season is going to be ridiculous, not because of the top of the table. Maybe the Champions League places will give us some drama.
I think we'll have the battle.
The bottom third of the table is going to be chaos because literally right now, half the league is in the relegation fight.
That's fantastic.
It makes for great, great television.
Speaking of Watford beating also Rans, yet struggling at this juncture of the weekend, same thing with with Bournemouth. They lose 4-1 to Huddersfield Town. Bournemouth is fairly fresh off of beating bottom of the barrel Chelsea 3-0.
Just looking for those.
It's just easy wins.
You know what's crazy though? I feel like before the season, I think both you and I had said like, hey, Bournemouth, maybe this year they're going to do a little bit of work. And it seemed like a few points throughout the year. I've been watching, like, I see this result today.
Well, early in the year, we're like, ooh, they suck. Yeah. What happened
there? It's like, oh, man, it's bad news. And then I saw this result today. I was like, oh, Bournemouth again. Like, oh, it's a bad result. Wouldn't expect more. You know what, though? They're not really in that bad a place.
No,
like,
not at all.
At all.
Despite losing 4-1 to a promoted side.
Yeah, they're in 10th, 31 points. That's not that high above the relegation zone, only 5 points, but they're hanging in there and definitely keeping themselves relevant. But it is one of those type of results. It's like, if you keep having those, you're going to end up in a really bad position at a time of year you don't want to be there.
Eddie Money's brother Steve had a brace in this one.
Steve Money.
The
forgotten son.
Not as good of hits, but hits nonetheless.
That's right.
Liverpool 2, Southampton 0, as really just a match. It was almost like vuvuzelas all over again as you the audio is distorted by the booze raining down towards Virgil van Dijk during the entire match.
Yeah, that was awesome, actually. It was probably my favorite part of the match. There's also a really great picture that I think Men in Blazers did a like caption this picture for. Virgil van Dijk also looking very ogre-ish that I'm sure the Southampton fans enjoyed too.
Oh, yeah.
But that Southampton side now sitting in the relegation zone, 26 points. They'd hoped to escape there today, having slipped in due to results on Saturday, but no luck on that front.
Is the dream over for Southampton? Has the sheen...
Us selling our best player for the last six straight years
right.
Have finally caught up with us? Yeah, I do think it has gotten to that point to an extent. I wouldn't be shocked to see them go down, but they're also the type of organization that if they go down, you don't expect them to go down long because their academy is just primed to pump out the type of players that they need. Like even if they go down this year, they're going to get £40 million probably for Ward-Prowse.
Right.
Like, is he worth that? No, but they
constantly Liverpool will absolutely pay that price.
Yes, they will. And they constantly turn those type of deals, which to me is just nonstop surprising. So,
which, by the way, did you hear Klopp's comment about Southampton?
What's that?
He just made the quip that, you know, he's like, wow, you know, they do have a lot of good players on there. Maybe we should put a scout down there.
There's a man with no shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move into some of the other matches.
That's all of them.
That is all of them.
That's all of them. It's over.
All right. I just want more.
West Brom 3, Chelsea 1.
Yeah, we're waiting for it. Yeah, waiting for it indeed. Let's get into then the American soccer story that was over this past weekend.
Really not even just this past weekend.
It's been last few months.
This has been simmering since we crapped the bed there in Trinidad.
It's been simmering longer than that, right?
To an extent. We need a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Put up your fist. Hashtag resistance. It started pretty much right around then.
Yeah.
Right? When it was official that we were not going to the Olympics, everyone decided that was it. Yeah. We're watching the Olympics.
We're watching the Olympics.
World Cup is where we're not going. We also don't make – we've never qualified for the Olympics in the past
in recent history.
Four times.
Sure.
We probably something we should look into doing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should
– either or.
Put that on the agenda.
I'd be okay with both of them.
Just make one.
Get
would
caught
be great.
Up in the spirit. But yeah, I you're right. That is where this story kind of began, at least for the masses. And then today it all came to a culmination. Yesterday it all comes to the point where these eight candidates are up for this final vote for the unknown number of delegates.
Pop quiz. Name all eight candidates right now. Go.
Paul Caligiuri.
Yep.
Hope Solo.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Gans.
Whoever that is, yes.
Yeah. Carlos Cordero.
Uh-huh.
Kathy Carter.
Uh-huh.
Eric Winalda.
Yep.
Kyle Martino.
And?
Steve Winograd.
Yes. Again, whoever that is.
Yeah. Were you impressed I got all those? I'm a little impressed I got all of them.
Impressed with yourself?
Yeah, I am. If nothing else, I'll pat my own back. But it's been a long haul. We've got all these candidates, all these people that have name recognition, some that don't.
Some that clearly don't.
Some that have what some might claim would be insider access, that would be the shadow picks, mm-hmm. the ones that the Illuminati have placed there for
Absolutely.
Us. We literally saw every potential storyline in this election. And I say this respectfully and disrespectfully at the same time.
Go ahead.
This election was no different than the presidential election, like the actual American presidential
right.
election to me.
Who is the Jeb Bush of this election?
Oh, definitely Paul Caligiuri, like without a doubt.
Yeah, I was going to say either him or Gans.
Someone who
– Steve Gans had a like a happy hour mixer on like Friday night where they were selling – it was like Steve Teenies or something like that.
Oh, stop it. No,
yes,
he did not.
No, they totally did that.
In Orlando?
Yeah.
He's not from Orlando, by the
right,
way.
Right, no, but it was for like he was there, and it was for all the
that's all I'm,
the dorks that he's trying to get to vote for him.
Imagine being like, what is the best thing we can do to get these millennials that we're trying to get
what
cast
about,
votes for us?
What if we had somebody create a cocktail with your name on it, Steve? Steve Gans.
Steve Teeny. Man, I hope – I always say this, like we should name the show this and then I forget
Steve
what
Teeny.
We're going to name it. But this is definitely the Steve
yeah.
Teeny show. We have all these people that are involved in this. I think we all kind of knew like going in, how many candidates do you think were actually legitimately had a shot at this?
Three maybe? Like, I would say the two...
The two establishment picks, right? Right. There's Kathy Carter, the current president of Soccer United Marketing.
Are they important?
I mean, they kind of run a lot of stuff in this country. And then, obviously, Carlos Cordero, who is the VP of Finance for U.S. Soccer, one of the few paid positions in American soccer. Yeah.
Pretty much the right-hand man to Sunil Gulati for all these years.
Yep. And then if you who's this mysterious third person that you think actually had a shot?
Yeah, kind of just the
– the internet's
pick,
favorite.
Just the you pick them. Just possibly collectively one of the other six could have possibly risen above. But really not really.
Yeah.
Maybe if had we hit Wednesday or even before that and all of these this gang of six – consolidated into one person, then maybe.
Here's the thing too, that this gang of six, right, these six outside candidates,
right,
that existed outside of Carter and Cordero, did you see any of these knobs that were making up this whole big deal about the fact that it was being called a gang? Like, how appropriate that soccer's inside, you know, political press are calling this a gang. Like, they're so bold that they know.
I mean, does it surprise you that they stupidly got hung up in the wordage?
This is the undertone of this entire election, right? Is and this is, again, too, why I felt like this was so comparable to the recent political presidential election, like the actual one, is that people really just got lost in the weeds in this entire thing. Like, every single thing. Like, think of the first vote that they cast in all this. They did this electronically, and it went terribly. If you've ever tuned in to watch electronic votes at any point, this is like a normality.
Oh, no, I absolutely loved what happened here, where you had Sunil Gulati and whoever this Bob guy is, and they clearly hated each other.
Mm-hmm.
They were fighting like an old married couple.
It was great.
And they were both, luckily, on mic.
Yeah.
For this argument that they had with one another.
Trying to explain, here's how you cast your
how
vote.
You cast your vote. But do you have to hit – right, but you have to hit send. Well, but you would hit and then it would say receive. But only after you hit send.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not what I'm hearing. Right, but you got to hit send.
Yeah, it was incredible. But it was also like the reason I bring that up is that the same people who were – casting that doubt were the same people who were saying, like, well, this is a show of the ineptitude of American soccer. Should they have practiced this? Yeah, they absolutely should have.
It didn't look good for it. It looked like, hey, this is the first time we've done this where people have actually tuned in and watched.
Oh, weird. That's because it is. But it's the rush for condemnation over every little thing that was going wrong. Like, if you watch, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire enough, you'll notice that they have to correct the audience on how to use those things every once in a while. Like, that's how frequently people are incapable of using electronic voting systems. So it's just the whole tone of the discussion going into this weekend was primed and ready for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, American soccer Twitter was at its zenith on Saturday morning. People commenting on a live stream that nobody was watching. Like, for the first 2 hours, of the general meeting, there were like 200 people combined nationwide, worldwide, watching the YouTube feed and the Facebook feed. Like, half the stump speeches that happened at the actual vote, 500 people total were watching it that weren't in the room. For all the people that lose their minds about American soccer and blah, 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 all the things that we should be doing and we should be challenging for World Cups and idiocy, 500 people in a country of 265 million plus tuned in to watch.
Yeah.
If that's not a sign of where we actually are with this sport in this country.
Slightly telling.
Mind-boggling. Like, to me, that's like, if you're looking for a sign, 500 people tuning into a general, like an annual general meeting for the decision-making meeting. Now, by the time we got to the actual votes,
I think it was like
3,000 on Facebook, and then it was like 2,000 on YouTube. But it's one of those things. It's like, guys, you can't.
But still,
you can't take yourself
3,000 in a country of 260 some odd million.
Think about the numbers of people that play soccer in this country alone, right?
Right.
Tens of millions of people.
3,000 participants of soccer in the town we are currently in.
Right?
Like, I mean, it's such a minuscule number.
It's one of those things that just makes me want to scream, because the people on the internet who think that the be-all, end-all that they believe is what it is, because in the echo chamber that they live in, don't live in the reality world that the American soccer election took place in.
So let's break this down. So going into I want to say it was Friday it broke. I think the meetings and everything started on like Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Friday morning, we hear that the Gang of Six, Thursday evening, attempted to consolidate into
like
a pact.
Like a pact, a coalition.
Right. Where they weren't going to do it initially, but like after the first vote, depending on how things broke.
Whoever had the most votes would get.
Everyone was going to just kind of fall in line behind that person.
Well, what we learned, though, is that reality fairly infrequently, at least in the world of soccer, follows the reality that was planned. Yeah, that never happened.
Never happened. Possibly because it was leaked. Possibly because it never presented an opportunity for that to happen.
Possibly because the most prominent outsider candidate never actually backed it.
Right. That's problematic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we get to the vote. Round one. And already, I mean, after the first vote, you knew, oh,
this is already over.
Every pipe dream that everybody on the internet had was exactly that.
Uh-huh.
The establishment, too, if you will, had 70.9% of the vote after the first round.
Yeah.
Again, you need 50 plus one to be elected.
If you added up all those...
So that's two people with 70... Basically 71%,
mm-hmm.
and then 29% distributed between six other candidates.
29% isn't – it's over half, but it's not – it's barely over half of what you need to win the election.
Right. You need
between
51.
Six people. The next round, we get the second round. Paul Caligiuri dropped out at that point.
Yeah.
So we're only dealing with five oppositions.
Because he got like 0.1.
Yeah, it was a really low percentage, right? But you're down to five, and the same thing happens.
Right. In fact, their total actually goes up. The top two, the establishment two, go from 70.9 to 75.1.
Jeez.
In the second vote. Guys like, so Kyle Martino, he goes from 8.6 to 10.2, so he gained, while Eric Winaldo goes from 13.7 to 10.8, so he dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Hope Solo pretty much stayed the same the whole time. She went 1.6, 1.5, 1.4. Those are her votes. And those are really the only ones worth note, because mm-hmm. those are the only other candidates that stayed in the race the entire time.
Yeah, both Gans and Winograd both dropped out eventually. And then by third ballot, we had seen that the move away from Carter had intensified. That we'd seen that between round one and two.
Right.
And then in round three, we saw a crowning of the new U.S. soccer president.
Yes, with 68.6% of the vote. So not 50.1, but 68.6%, almost 70% of the vote,
mm-hmm.
went on the third ballot to Carlos Cordero, your new USSF president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just never close.
It
It was just never – like, it was never hanging in the balance. It was really just a formality. The three rounds were a formality to what was infinitely clear after that first round. And really, if you paid attention, infinitely clear when the entire room stood up and gave a standing ovation to the USSF Board of Governors when they were introduced at this meeting.
Yeah.
People get confused because you get stuck in this mindset and in this echo chamber that is the internet and is, you know, soccer Twitter, that like, oh, wow, there's all these change agents. There's all these people that are pushing for something new. Nearly zero of those people actually had a vote in this election. We talked about this weeks ago, months ago. The people that actually voted in this election, for better or for worse, are the people that are actually involved at critical levels of American soccer. So you're talking about the people that run all of the essential, you know, the umbrella agencies or of governance of youth soccer, all of those that run the governance of adult amateur, all of those that run the governance of the actual professional leagues. And then you also have like the athletes council, which, by the way, and then this is a key thing. The athlete council is a key thing because everyone wants to point to the athletes and the soccer people having a voice. Alexi Lawes had an amazing tweet.
Yeah, it was amazing. Amazing.
So you had a council, an athlete council, who had eight options, four of which were their own contemporaries.
Yeah.
Their own fellow national team members, their own fellow players. Literally people they played against and played with, and they, as a block, instead voted for the would-be president, Carlos Cordero.
Yeah. Look. I mean, I've said this on previous shows. I'm going to say it again now. Could U.S. soccer have done a better job of running itself over the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Absolutely.
Years. 50 years.
Yeah, whatever number, I mean, you want to choose. Whatever number you want to choose.
Because you can go back and go revisionist history and everything. Yeah. You can go back and go, why didn't we
do this?
What
this,
if, right? You can what if every decade of American soccer till we friggin' landed the Mayflower.
And I also know that a lot of people that are chirping online and who fill up the forums and who pack the stands are people who are relatively new to this process. And I'm not knocking that. That's awesome. I'm glad to have you.
It actually shows the growth.
Yeah. I'm all for that.
The growth that was overseen by people like Sunil Gala.
And that's my point. I remember the time before Sunil Gala. I remember the time when we didn't qualify for World Cups.
When soccer wasn't cool?
Regularly. I remember when no one – I remember getting made fun of daily for the sport that I chose to love. You knobs who believe that nothing has advanced over the last 20 years in this administration, the people who are the establishment in this country who've run this sport for the last 5-ish, 10, 20 years, you are out of your minds if you don't think – that we are light years ahead of where we were before that time frame.
I mean, even just a decade ago.
MLS literally almost died after the turn of the century. Regardless of your fears or your thoughts of what MLS is today, the top league in this country almost went bankrupt 15 years ago.
Here's one for you. I was actually literally thinking of this today. What did USL, the league you work in, look like 7 years ago? Not even a decade ago. 7 years ago.
Mid-markets were your best bets.
What did high-range attendance look like?
Top range was in the 6,000 range.
Yeah, and that was wow. Yeah,
games.
And that was like jaw-dropping.
Yeah, absolutely.
Someone got 6,000 to show up on average.
That was high-end, right? A league that was probably averaging close to 1,000 people a game, mm-hmm. max. MLS hemorrhaging money, cutting
clubs.
You people who think that soccer is bad now in this country have literally no clue. And I'm not saying that to be mean to you. I'm saying that because you don't know how bad it was.
It was pretty bad.
You had to pay-per-view to watch National Team World Cup qualifiers. Oh, and the friendlies, they just weren't televised.
Right.
Like, this is the thing that blows my mind about all this. It's devastating. Like, I'm gutted that we're not playing in this World Cup. But this used to be the regularity. And that we've all gotten so used to this that we think that it's expected is ridiculous. Should we do it? Absolutely. Every single World Cup we should be qualifying for, without question. But it's not a given. There are world powers that miss out on World Cups regularly. You know who else isn't going to this tournament? Freaking Holland.
Yeah. Are they good? Have they been in finals recently?
I don't know. I mean, 2010? Only within the last two World Cups. That's the thing that blows my mind about all this. Guys, we are absolutely in a point in this country where we need change. We need growth. We need the sport to evolve. We need its leadership to evolve. I'm not denying any of that. But if you think that the administration that was here, that got us to the point that we are at, the fact that you're even involved in the conversation at all is likely due to the people who've guided the sport for the last 10 to 15 years. And I'm not saying that they were perfect people or that they did everything right or that they didn't associate themselves with bad people from time to time.
Chuck Blazer.
Yeah. Warner. Like, right, the list goes on. But that's the story of this sport, too.
Right.
Like, the upper echelons of this sport are bathed in blood.
I was going to say, look at the people running UEFA right now.
Dude, the people pumping the European soccer full of money right now are literally tyrants from the Middle East.
Yeah.
Qatar and the UAE are where a ton of the money from this sport are originating from. Soccer.
Not my club. We're owned by just.
Just dirty Russian money.
Just guys. It, yeah. I mean, no. Pure as the driven snow.
No, oh, yeah. It's
that
it's
really, it's
pure as the Russian snow.
That's super dirty.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing that really gets me about all this is. The lack of maturity in the audience that digests the sport, understanding what corruption is and what actual dirty people look like. Warner, Chuck Blazer, those are dirty people, right? There is no way that Sunil Gulati could be a kingpin and Chuck Blazer go down and Gulati not go with him. Like, that's the thing that blows my mind. Everyone's out here claiming, oh, these guys are, robbing American soccer and they're just lining their own pockets. Yeah, they probably made some money off this, but come on.
Mm-hmm.
Just come on. The FBI doesn't ignore people that they can get money from. That's just something that doesn't happen. They want that money. So I'm over this thought that American soccer is this corruption-ridden enterprise.
Right. But, I mean,
is it there? Totally. But it's not an organization that's rife with it. It's an organization that has pockets of it. They need to be rooted out.
But, DJ, we have 109 pro clubs that aren't given the right to play in MLS.
No, we don't.
No, that's I read it on Twitter, so it's real.
Mm. Sorry, I went on a bit of a rant there. I just looked at the clock and how long I'd just been speaking there.
Yeah, you just spoke for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That was about five. That was a good five.
I'm really impassioned by this sport.
No, you should be.
The naivety of people who don't have a longer view on this sometimes just blows my mind.
But again, 109 pro clubs can't play in MLS because
Sorry, this is like the type of conspiracy theories we're seeing is like, we talked about the pro council, right? The player council.
Right.
There were a number of the player council people who were not there for the voting.
Mm-hmm.
Among them, national team recents like Brad Guzan, yep. Jonathan Spector.
I don't know, but I would say recent. I would say de facto number one.
Well, I'm just going to say Spector is someone who's not been in there regularly, right? But
he's an awesome.
But you know what I mean? People were literally all over them, calling them traitors and calling them worse names than that aren't coming to mind. But because they weren't there, their group decided as a block that they were going to vote for one person. So it didn't even matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Their votes were already going to the place they were going. And those guys were playing games with their teams that day. One of the guys who's on the council plays MASL. Professional indoor soccer in Ontario. His team had a game the night before. You know how much money that guy's making? Peanuts. And you expect him to hop on a plane and fly down?
I'll be right there.
So it's one of those things. It's just American soccer has grown by leaps and bounds, and I'm ecstatic that it is what it is. But damn, people, like, use logic a little bit. It's not always a conspiracy theory. And I think that's the place where we live, and the general world climate kind of lends itself to that. But damn, it's just mind-boggling to me.
It was good times, though.
That's how I feel about it.
Carlos Cordero, now president of U.S. soccer. Obviously some big things that he has to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Not like – it's not like – like long-term visions, like you got to hire a national team coach like within the next like 6-7 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe he waits till after the World Cup, but that's like probably one of his chief concerns right now. Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, so one of the few things that we've heard in the aftermath of this is like, what's he gonna do? Mm-hmm. Right?
He also has two GM roles. Which, incidentally enough, Carlos Cordero was the catalyst for those roles being created.
Yeah, so previously it was just Sunil. Like, Sunil Gulati was the president, and mm-hmm. he was directly responsible, along with the board, for hiring the national team manager. Now what that Cordero is ushering in is this idea of there's going to be a national team GM, general manager, for both the men's side and the women's side.
Right, so these were roles that were announced couple months ago,
mm-hmm.
and it actually was, conveniently enough, Cordero who was the guy pushing for these roles to be added.
Mm-hmm. And these are essentially like separate technical directors for both sides of the house.
Correct.
I mean, that's essentially what this role is. Jurgen Klinsmann used to hold both of those, and we've mm-hmm. not had a technical director since he left the position.
Right. So now we have neither. We have mm-hmm. no technical director nor coach.
But hopefully soon. And it sounds like because these are roles that were originated before this vote took place, there had already been some wheels set in motion for hiring those people. Maybe, and again, we've not been given any insider knowledge on this, but maybe one of the players who was involved in this presidential election process could take over that process. There's a way to get soccer people involved with also not leaving the organization in a position where they could get potentially put in a world of hurt on a business perspective.
Right.
I said this a couple of shows ago. All the change that people want in this country costs infinite amounts of money.
And apparently that was what Cordero was campaigning on, that he had a vision and a plan for adding, you know, everyone talks about the surplus that mm-hmm. U.S. soccer has, and his vision was to add to that because you have to add to that to grow youth soccer, to grow the, you know, just the whole development system from mm-hmm. from bottom to top
yep.
in American soccer.
Yeah, I mean, it's just there's logic behind bringing a guy in like Cordero. Even if you don't like the establishment, if you're looking
for
something
new. And we're not saying
either
of us like him. We don't know what he's going to bring. But
no.
I think we're both on the same page. We don't see it as the apocalypse of American soccer that some people see it. Like, hey, I mean, it could go bad.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But Cordero did a good job of straddling the fence and saying, like, look, I can be an agent for change. I brought in these GM roles.
Right.
I ushered that in. Let me usher in other elements, too.
Well, I think he played – I just mentioned it. He played, though, on the one thing that everyone has to be able to realize you have to praise the previous administration for is mm-hmm. that – they turn American soccer into something that can actually make money so that it can spend on things. Because, again, going back to what the dark days that you were talking about, American soccer used to not be lucrative in any way whatsoever.
No. No. Money was something that they didn't have. One other quick thing. I know we need to move on from this so that we can get into your own opinions of this. But one of the things that I found most shocking about the aftermath of this election was the immediate calls, and I'm talking like immediate calls, including from people who I respect and from people who I find to be intelligent,
uh-huh.
to spawn and start up a new federation.
I mean, part of this –
and also a new league.
I was going to say part of this started before the election even. Mm-hmm. The Jacksonville Armada's owner, Guy Smiley, I don't know his name, was talking about and having meetings on a Division Zero,
mm-hmm.
as they were dubbing it.
An unaffiliated, non-USFF sanctioned –
non-sanctioned, yeah.
Non-FIFA sanctioned league. Look, I'm people are free to do what they want to do.
Right. There's nothing wrong with non-sanctioned leagues. I run several myself.
Yeah. When you get into the professional ranks, it presents unique challenges. Things like,
absolutely.
Like registering players, agents, right. involvement.
Things that are important at that level that are actually just hindrances at the level that I work at.
I'm going to go with a really easy one here. Referees. Non-sanctioned referees. Just wrap your head around that for a minute.
Yeah, I do it all
Look,
the time.
It's fine to have these discussions, and perhaps valuable discussion can come out of it that would produce good net benefits for professional soccer here. But man, the lack of foresight, the lack of knowledge of what's happened in the past here. Guys, we've literally been down this road before in American soccer. In fact, the last time American soccer was a big deal was like in the 1920s. Back when immigration was still a big driver in this country in a way that it isn't now. And defining the major populace and the major demographics. The last time that we had a war between two factions over who was going to be the USSF president, we legitimately ended up with the dark ages of American soccer. Like that period from the 30s through the 1980s, where we had like no pro scene and nothing of relevance, and a sport that literally became unimportant to the most magnified degrees, all came literally out of a fight for control of American soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Two federations got so bogged down with fighting for it that one squeaked out the other, and it left itself so weak afterward that a league that it managed challenged its own authority. Like, that's the position that people are trying to put us in again. I don't think history is going to repeat itself to that extent because I think the money that's behind the establishment side right now is just way too big to overcome. It's the realities of the modern
but
world.
But money
and sport.
Is evil and bad, and that's what makes sports evil, right?
Ah, never mind the fact that European soccer is rampant with the illegalities.
No, everyone's playing for free over there.
Yeah.
Just the love of the game.
But anyway, that's just something that really blew my mind how quick everyone was ready to jump in that instead of just saying, like, let's buckle down. It's the equivalent of saying, like, I'm going to move to Canada if my president doesn't get elected, right? Or I'm going to start my own country if the person I want to be elected doesn't get elected. It's that absurd.
Yeah. It's California succeeding from the union. We're our own thing now.
Last time we tried to see that happen for real, legitimately a war happened, so
it didn't go well.
Yeah. We did ask our fans what they thought of this.
We did.
Our fans / listeners, because I hate to say that everyone's a fan of us that listens to us. We
Some
know
people
that's not
are,
the case.
Almost North Korean style, like gun to the head, have to listen to this.
I listen to it so I know what my enemies are saying. But what we asked, though, is we geared it towards this presidential election. We wanted to know, what is it that new president Carlos Cordero could do as the new U.S. soccer president to make you happy?
Right. So if he could just do – if he could enact one policy or make one change or one hire or one whatever on your behalf, like if he called you up and said, hey – if I can do one thing, what could it be?
What would make you happy?
Right. I saw we got several answers.
Yeah, we got about 10 answers total.
Three of which were quit.
Yeah. We had a quit, we had not be it, and we had a resign.
Right. That's kind of the same answer.
Look, I get it. It's an easy, snarky reply, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all know he's not going to do that.
It's unlikely.
This is a little bit the problem with American soccer.
I would say you said one extra word there.
With American? Just America in general? Yeah, you're probably right.
This is a bit of a problem with America.
It's like the shout at the internet and that's good enough movement. You know what I mean? Right. Like that's what this is. And like, look, the reality is that you don't like Trump as a president. Like, you're gonna have to do something about it. If you don't like Cordero as a president, what are you gonna do about it? And saying what is it that Cordero could do to change your mind about him to make you happy? Like, I have things that if Trump would do them, it would make me happier, right, as an American citizen.
Okay, jumping back to a point I think that you were trying to make earlier. This election proved that those – that their sole benefit that they're giving to the soccer world is just the screeds on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially have no voice, no merit,
mm-hmm,
in the actual – what actually happens in soccer.
Do you remember a while ago when I went on a little bit of like a Twitter rant and I said like, get off Twitter.
Only
like,
a while ago?
Well, a while ago.
You go on a couple
– it's been a couple days.
Yeah.
I went on this specific Twitter rant.
Rant man over here.
Where I basically just said like, get off Twitter.
Like, yeah. Like,
put boots on the ground.
Right.
Actually do something.
Because again – the people that actually had votes in this election,
mm-hmm,
they actually have like positions and roles and do stuff within American soccer. Oh, you may not exactly like the way they're doing it or what, or you have some preconceived notion. But again, these are people that are actively doing stuff for soccer. And I think that's what really needs to be learned from this election is like, and I would say that this goes beyond just soccer and just kind of just in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, candidates and elections aren't always going to work for you.
No.
So you just kind of have to – if you want something to happen, you need to get off the internet and pull up your sleeves, mm-hmm, and get to work.
This is America in general. Like, again, like,
yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is not an American soccer thing. This is just life.
People like often claim. I know they've said it to you, but I get it a little bit more frequently, given like my job, uh-huh, specifically. But we often get called sellouts, or right, that we we've been bought off, right? Once upon a time, neither one of us had a job in American soccer,
right,
at all.
Right. I was a morning show producer, and you worked in selling software to colleges.
Yeah, right? Like, that's what we did. And instead of just bitching on the internet, which both of us did regularly and continue to do.
I mean, that's what it's there for, right?
Right. But we didn't passively accept that. We both went out and used the opportunities that our bitching on the internet presented to us.
What did we both want? What did we both collectively want? We wanted to see what?
Soccer relevancy.
We wanted to see soccer succeed in the city of Cincinnati where we live and what we call home. So what did we do?
We interviewed a guy who ran a pro team that turned into a relationship where he offered us a job.
Yeah.
Which landed us both jobs influencing the local Cincinnati soccer scene.
Yeah. And if you're sitting there thinking like, oh man, that'll take like 100 years. This is like 2014 through now.
Yeah.
Like I started, not even 4 years.
To be fair, I started this blog, I think 9 years ago now, sure. 8 years ago now, right? But I had no idea that I was trying to do this then.
But as far as like us actually like physically doing things.
Yeah.
Like we got hired on to help out our local NPSL club in 2014.
As TV commentators, by the way.
Right. Which we then both quickly realized, hey, there's a lot of other needs that need to be met with this club.
Mm-hmm.
And because we want to see soccer succeed in this city, we're going to take up those reins.
Yeah.
Fast forward like 2 years later, and you are interviewing and accepting a position with FC Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
I went on to help the team grow in Dayton,
mm-hmm.
and now operate adult amateur soccer leagues throughout Cincinnati, Dayton, and Columbus.
Like that's what we did.
Like we just did it.
That's what it takes. Even if you want to change things dramatically, there are plenty of things about American soccer I want to change.
Right.
But I knew I could change more from the inside.
Right.
Than I could change from the outside.
And there's still so much more that you and I both want to do to enact change in American soccer.
That we haven't even gotten a chance
to. We haven't got a chance to, but we've put ourselves in positions to hopefully do that.
That's what change is.
Like, you...
Don't give a snarky reply on the internet.
Right. That's worth nothing.
And we appreciate those of you who gave us the replies tonight. I mean,
the gifts are good.
They're great.
The snark is also fun.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, that like it accomplishes nothing outside of me going like, heh. And then I just scroll on down.
Yeah. So let's get to some of these other replies because we did have some ones that were a little bit more ingenuitive than just quit.
Stop working.
Stop doing that. Perpetual question answerer, Gage Magoto, mm-hmm. He offered up, have the power to make everyone chill out. Oh my God, I'd love to have that power. And let him be the USSF president a while before everyone decides to burn down the establishment. Love the nice middle of the road answer there. Pete Wheatmartian, another fairly frequent replier. He says, help stabilize the leagues. The parity of the few years of NASL versus USL doesn't really help advance soccer at all. Totally agree. That would be a nice thing to get settled easily. TJ Zaremba, the perpetual poker of American soccer Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's probably the best way of...
He's a good rabble rouser.
He does love the rabble. He says
on my Mount Rushmore of rabble rousers, he's on it.
He's definitely up there. And he does it in a slow burn method too.
Absolutely.
He threw out the perfect poke. Ban Tinfoil Ted from Twitter. I'm sure that Carlos will have that power, TJ. Connor Rivera, he offered up whitewash the office and bring in new faces for the organization. Not sure if it would be effective, but hey, it'd be a good PR move if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, new voices, new eyes, new opinions are always good.
Yeah.
We do need that, yes.
Matt Morris, he offered up, actually set which leagues are going to be in the division. So another shout for a little bit more clarity
on the organizational structure. Yeah, I mean, I guess some of that is a bit up in the air still, as we have a Division II team that's no longer Division II.
Mm.
And we have two other Division III teams that are coming online hopefully soon.
Sure.
Tectonic plates, yeah. Folks.
And then the last answer we got to was from Jeff Tebbets. Pyramid stabilization. I don't believe that we will appease many PR people, but if we can establish a solid D2 and D3, maybe we can figure out the next step instead of demanding everything be torn down and rebuilt to resemble Europe. And I think that's a really key point here too. Like, we can want to be what Europe has without doing it exactly the way they mm-hmm. do it.
Also, sidebar, Jeff, you have to reply in Japanese in all of your tweets.
Yeah, please do that.
I think that's mandated now.
It's established.
Now that we know that you can, you have to.
don't expect us to be able to read it.
No. Well, I mean, the Google, the little
translate. Google does offer translate.
We'll take care of it.
Yeah.
But if you can do it, do it.
Yeah, but thanks everyone for your replies. Greatly appreciated. There's definitely a variety of responses out there. Look, even if you had an easy answer of quit, it shows you have a passion about the sport. Do something with it. That's the best advice I think any of us can offer. Yeah.
Do stuff.
Just do. Speaking of do, let's do the last thing we normally do on these podcasts and quickly give our winners and wankers, because no one wants to listen much longer.
No. If you made it this long,
cheers.
You will now be treated to something that was also hastily put together.
Yeah.
Winners and wankers, your winner.
My winner this week, I'm giving it to Rafa Benitez.
Okay.
Beleaguered Newcastle manager.
Fat Spanish weigher.
Really, fat Spanish weigher. Had a rough go of late. No one leaving him good tips. But he has stuck around in Newcastle. Today, while being quizzed about and the post-match interviews after the win over Manchester United, reporter Connor McNamara did one of those little mic tests where you're kind of like testing things out and you go, one, two, one, two.
Sibilance.
Right? Sibilance. And Connor says, 1-2, 1-2. And Rafa goes, no, 1-0.
Oh, that's a good.
1-0.
That's good
one there, Rafa.
Look at that guy.
That guy, you can tell he's got a Twitter account. He knows how to troll.
Oh, man.
Well done.
That's either fantastic or he was that aloof that he literally thought
the guy was
telling him the score was 1-2.
1-2. No, it was 1-0. How about your winner?
My winner goes to Landon Donovan.
Okay.
He made his Club Lyon debut.
Oh, yeah?
Only played about 7 minutes. But according to most reports, didn't suck.
All right. Good for him.
And people were actually impressed that, like, dude could still move up and down the pitch.
Weird.
Like 30 whatever he is. Like he was zipping on up and down.
He's 37.
Yeah.
Excuse me, 36.
Yeah.
No, wait, he's about to turn 37, so I feel a little bit better.
And he was able to scoot.
Yeah.
At least for 7 minutes there.
Hey, I'm happy.
Up and down that pitch.
If nothing else, that someone from my generation can still do it at that level. Do you have a wanker you'd like to share?
Yes, I do. My wanker... It probably won't be your wanker because as much as you might want it to be, you have reasons that you can't make it. So I will speak. Las Vegas Lights.
Nope, I did it.
Okay.
I don't even care.
All right.
Don't care. I'm with you.
All right, here we go.
This is my wanker too.
Las Vegas Lights.
No.
Which way do you want to go with this? Because there was actually two wanker-worthy moments for them this week. There was the kit.
And then there was also...
Well, there was also the...
it was the short reveal. With the bathrobes?
With the bathrobes. But that wasn't... That was... The wanker part of that was not the... Whatever. It was the fact that they announced the incentive structure.
Oh, my God, I know. I knew this was going to be a part of it, too.
Goal incentives on wins. They're paying their guys in casino money. Poker chips.
It was a... If they score 3 goals or more
right.
in a win, they get a $100 poker chip to the casino.
Right. That is the most Vegas thing ever.
It's not only the most Vegas thing ever, but it's legitimately an embodiment of like every single fear about putting soccer in Las Vegas.
Well, putting pro sports in general in Vegas.
The fear in pro sports in Vegas is that the betting nature of that town will negatively impact the athletic purity of playing a sport in that town, right? Soccer is a sport where people don't make a lot of money to begin with. Lower league soccer tends to be a sport where people really aren't paid very well.
Mm-hmm.
Giving people who aren't paid very well poker chips as a part of their payment seems squirrely.
Hey, we're gonna see this here though. Like Vegas is having this weird transformation
into a sports town.
Like, so they have an NHL team now.
Mm-hmm.
They will now have a USL team.
Mm-hmm.
And according to everything we're hearing, the Raiders will be playing there here in a couple years.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have NFL, NHL, and pro soccer.
That was bad. Then there was the short reveal, which involved a bunch of men wearing just shorts, taking off robes.
And giant hotel robes. I think that was the same press conference as like, hey, poker chips for winners.
No, it was. It definitely was. Because it was the short sponsor was a casino. I can't remember which one.
The casino that's handing out the poker chips.
And then, and then the last bit was just the jerseys themselves. I'll let their design speak for themselves. I don't need to delve into that. But if I want to go with one feature that I want to point out.
The smiley face?
It's not the smiley face.
Oh, really?
I found that actually to be a little comical.
It's comical, like, on the surface. But then it's like, oh, that's like legitimately part of their kit.
That yeah. Would you ever? Getafe did that a few years ago. They did the Burger King King underneath the jersey because that was their shirt sponsor was Burger King. I thought that was great. I can like the smiley face for the same reasons. The point that really gets me with these jerseys.
Zappos.com?
Nope, not Zappos.com. Okay. It's the fact that this is a team in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Right.
That plays a majority of its season through the summer. That's primary kit, their home kit, is majority black.
Not a lot of forethought in that.
What?
But you have to have it black so you can highlight
the lights.
The lights.
Yeah, I know. That brings us to the end of this week's show. As always, thanks for everyone who participated. If you want to get involved, give us a ring. Contact at wrongsideofthewall.com.
Don't give us a ring cock.
Yeah, don't give us a ring cock. We don't want one of those.
Hard pass.
Yeah. Unless you really want one. Maybe it's great and you should send it along. All that said, you can get a hold of us though. And if you want to send us that ring cock, go ahead and get us at contact at wrongsideofthepond.com. You can also get Jeremy at Jeremy Lance. Get me at wrongsideofpond. That's this week's show.